Good evening to you all, and welcome to the Peace Alliance monthly field call for June 2018. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and it's a real pleasure to have you with us tonight. The topic for tonight's call is a relatively sober one, I'd say a sobering topic. We're talking about nuclear weapons and the dangers of nuclear weapons and ways to avoid those dangers. And I think even contemplating the idea that there are these super powerful, dangerous, horrible weapons in the world really takes some degree of courage. I think it's daunting and sort of sickening just to consider that these weapons exist in our world. And it's probably tempting to ignore that fact and to sort of go about our business, go about our lives. And that's a legitimate choice if that's what people, you know, that's what somebody wants to handle. But I really commend the folks on this call for being willing to look squarely at the fact that these weapons exist in our world, and there may be ways for us to work to reduce their prevalence, reduce their very existence, and reduce the danger that they could be used. So I really want to commend you and thank you for joining us tonight in solidarity and hope and the possibility that we can take active steps to increase our safety and the chance to really enjoy life on this planet. So thank you. As far as our agenda tonight, in a few moments, I'm going to introduce our special guest, and then we'll have a chance to hear from him, Rick Wayman, from the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, and then we'll have a chance for some question and answer and discussion with him. Then we'll go over our monthly action for the month of June. You all should have received in your email inbox a copy of our action sheet for June. So sometime in the next half hour, I encourage you, if you haven't already, to access that action sheet so you can follow along on it while we go over some guidance on the action. We'll have a chance for questions about that action and about the issues underlying it. We'll have an update from the Department of Peacebuilding Committee from Nancy Merritt, who's our Leadership Council lead on the Department of Peacebuilding. And then we'll hear shares from the field, folks, including any of you who have things going on in your area, in your neighborhood, in your congressional district, activities, events, campaigns that you want to let us know about. So that will happen in the last 10 or 15 minutes of the call. So again, thank you so much for being with us. Rick Wayman is the Director of Programs and Operations for the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. He's been in that role since 2007. Prior to that, he was the Press and Communications Officer for the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament in London, England. The Nuclear Age Peace Foundation was founded in 1982, and its mission is to educate and advocate for peace and a world free of nuclear weapons and to empower peace leaders. So it's probably no surprise that this is an organization that we are in alliance with and sort of see eye to eye about needs to move forward effectively and in solidarity. So I really am grateful for Rick to be being with us tonight and offer you a warm welcome. Thanks for being here, Rick.
All right. Thanks so much, Dan. And so thanks to you and to the Peace Alliance team for inviting me on the call this evening. It's been, as I'm sure you all are very well aware, it's been a particularly busy couple of days for those of us who are working on nuclear disarmament and peace in Korea, and I'm sure that includes many of you on this call. So I want to thank you all for paying attention to peace and for working for peace. So the Singapore summit is still very fresh, and in my opinion, it's hard to know what to make of it just yet. But for the past year and a half of the Trump presidency, and before that as well, my organization has been calling for diplomacy with North Korea. So a lot of the details from yesterday, the lack of details in some cases, remain to be seen. So I want to focus this evening on some other related issues that we know are going on and that we can for sure do something about. I will, if in the Q&A, if any of you want to get into North Korea, Singapore at all, happy to do that as well. So to give you a little outline of the issues that I'll be addressing tonight, four things: the U.S. Nuclear Posture Review, Second thing is the current and planned, quote, modernization of the U.S. nuclear arsenal. Don't bang on the bomb, which is a fantastic activist tool. And finally, local resolutions on nuclear weapons issues. So let me jump right into it, and I'll say up front that I'm going to go kind of from dark to light, or from, sort of heavy to hopeful. So bear with me, please. So in the nuclear posture review, this is a document that every presidential administration, for the past few administrations anyway, has released typically early in the administration. The Trump one came out a few months ago in February. So in the introduction to that document, the Nuclear Posture Review, sometimes called the NPR, and it's repeated later in the body of the document, the authors write, quote, "We must look reality in the eye and see the world as it is, not as we wish it to be." So that, to me, is a very disturbing quote. The glasses that they're looking through are very dark, because what they're proposing over and over in that document is a readiness and a willingness to use nuclear weapons, including to use nuclear weapons first. They unashamedly say that they're ready to resume nuclear testing in response to what they call geopolitical challenges. There's a new nuclear arms race. It's out of control. I don't know how much you all have heard about it. I'll get into it a little more in my second section under modernization. But the nuclear weapon designers at the United States Los Alamos National Laboratory have welcomed what they're calling the second nuclear age. This is good for business for them. And if we allow the nuclear arms race to continue along this path, we're inevitably going to create new generations of victims. Of course, there's the risk of nuclear weapons being used, and that can't be discounted. There's a very real risk of that happening. But it's also important to point out that lasting damage to humanity is caused at every level of the nuclear chain, from uranium mining to the production of plutonium to the storage or precarious storage of highly radioactive waste. For tens of thousands of years, innocent victims are created by the nuclear arms racers every step of the way. Another thing that the authors say in the Nuclear Posture Review is that, quote, "For decades, the U.S. led the world in efforts to reduce the role and number of nuclear weapons," end quote. So the thing to really notice there is the use of past tense. They didn't say that the U.S. has led or is leading or will always lead. They said that it led, meaning, in their opinion, that era has come to an end. So to me, it's hard to argue with President Obama, who, when he was in office, said that as the only nation to ever use nuclear weapons, the United States has a moral obligation to continue to lead the way in eliminating them. Yet here we are today, unilaterally surrendering our leadership on this issue. One really interesting issue of morality around nuclear weapons has to do with Pope Francis. So I had the honor of meeting him last November at the Vatican. And when I met with him, with a number of other academics and activists working on this issue, he gave a speech which broke new ground in Catholic teaching on nuclear weapons. And he said that the threat of their use, as well as their very possession, is to be firmly condemned. So even threatening to use them, he says, is to be firmly condemned. That's a bold moral statement, and one that I very much agree with. The Nuclear Posture Review is dripping with the threat of nuclear weapons. It seeks to justify, rationalize, and shift blame for the United States' continued possession and development of new nuclear weapons. So that's what we're dealing with. That is the official guidance of the U.S. government right now on nuclear weapons. And to move into my second topic for tonight of modernization, this is a really tricky subject because people like modern things. when you modernize something, what do you think of? You think you're making it safer. You're making it easier to use. Maybe you're making it last longer. But the problem here is that we're talking about nuclear weapons, and these are weapons that are designed to kill millions of people. So right now, the U.S. is in the midst of a 30-year, $1.7 trillion spending binge to modernize its nuclear warheads, delivery systems, and production infrastructure. And that is actually the cost estimate, $1.7 trillion. That's the cost estimate for what was begun under President Obama. And with President Trump's ambitious additional plans, the cost is undoubtedly going to be higher. So I don't have time this evening to go into exact details, but basically we're talking about new nuclear warheads for all of our different types of weapons, new land-based intercontinental ballistic missiles for our 400 silos dotted around Montana, North Dakota, Wyoming, Nebraska, and Colorado, new nuclear-armed submarines, new bomber aircraft, a new uranium processing facility, two new plutonium pit manufacturing plants. I could go on, but I think you get the picture. This is a major undertaking. Many of these new weapons are intended to be actively deployed through the end of this century. So remember that we're in 2018. So we're talking 80 plus years that they're intending to continue possessing and deploying nuclear weapons at a minimum. Meanwhile, while we are doing all of this, our government insists that other nations not develop nuclear weapons or even uranium enrichment capabilities. So the message that sends, of course, is nuclear weapons are necessary for our security, but not for other countries. And I think the double standard there is very clear and does not lead to positive outcomes. So I want to move on to the Don't Bank on the Bomb report. This is something much more positive in my mind, something that we should really feel good about. And it's something that we can all actively implement in our own lives. So each year, our friends at PAX, which is a peace and nuclear disarmament organization based in the Netherlands, they put out a report entitled Don't Bank on the Bomb. They detail the companies that are involved in the production of nuclear weapons. Who do you think is pocketing that $1.7 trillion? It's largely companies. The report also details the financial institutions that provide financing to the nuclear weapon producers. And equally important, in my opinion, they detail the financial institutions that have implemented explicit policies not to invest in nuclear weapon producers. So the company, the financial institutions that have specific social guidelines saying we will not be involved in supporting the nuclear weapons business. So you can easily find out if your bank is financing companies that produce nuclear weapons. And if so, I would encourage you to use your leverage to try to get them to change their policy or maybe change your bank. That's something that it's a process that I undertook a couple years ago, and it was hard and it took a while, but it felt like the right thing to do. So I would encourage you to do that. It's one very concrete action that you can take. So a great example here in this country is Bank of America. They provide billions in loans to companies that produce nuclear weapons. And you might have heard that Bank of America recently stated they would no longer provide financing for the assault weapon industry. So my question to you is, do you think we can make them do the same with the nuclear weapons industry? I think that we can. We're going to be launching a campaign together with a few other organizations in the next couple months targeting Bank of America and raising awareness. I think a lot of people who have checking accounts with Bank of America or maybe a credit card, they have no idea that their money and this company they're involved with is involved in nuclear weapons. So for that, check out the website don'tbankonthebomb.com. You can get the full report, and you can also see examples of successful divestment campaigns from around the world. And the final thing I want to mention tonight before we go over to Q&A is local resolution. And this is another very positive thing to focus on. Our country right now is on the federal level in a bit of an impasse around nuclear weapons, to say the least. We're not seeing a lot of positive progress happening. But in cities and towns and even states around the U.S., we have seen resolutions introduced and passed opposing nuclear weapons and supporting nuclear disarmament. Tacoma Park, Maryland, Ojai, California are two examples of towns that have recently passed resolutions. Actually, my local assembly member here in California recently introduced a joint resolution in the California state legislature around these issues as well. My organization is currently working on getting a resolution introduced in Santa Barbara, which is where we're based. Excuse me. So some of these resolutions are pretty basic. They are stating support of congressional bills to restrict the first use of nuclear weapons. That's what we're going to talk about later this evening in terms of the action sheet, something that you all might get involved in supporting this month. Other resolutions are more in-depth, expressing support for the new Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons and other progressive efforts for nuclear disarmament. So if you're interested in learning more about the local resolutions and maybe introducing something in your city or town, I encourage you to get in touch with me and we'll get some information out to you. This is something that we have a lot more power on, a lot more immediate power on, because you know, our city council members are our neighbors, often our friends, and we can more often and more quickly convince them to do the right thing. So I think I'm going to stop there for now and turn it back over to Dan.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rick. I know it's a lot of ground to cover in a short period of time, but I really appreciate you spelling all that out. Folks who have questions or want to engage in some discussion, you can press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that will look like a raised hand. I'll wait for a couple of questions to line up. And I had a question in the meantime. I'm going to take sort of a facilitator's privilege, which is, Rick, on the international level, when there'll be some folks that say we need modern weapons for a deterrent. We need to have the best and the fastest of any kind of weapon system because we have hostile relations with some countries. Do you have a sense of what the roadmap towards disarmament would look like in that context, when you have countries that are somewhat squared off against each other around markets, territories, economic systems, and you know, belief systems? Is there a roadmap to step away from these weapons of mass destruction?
Well, at the moment, there is no roadmap among the nuclear-armed countries. The non-nuclear-armed countries, many of them, have taken a major step forward on that, which is last year the negotiation and adoption of the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which outlaws the everything you can imagine, the development, production, possession, deployment, transit, financing, et cetera, of nuclear weapons. And so that treaty is open for signature. The ratification process is underway, and it should enter into force within the next couple of years. That was a good faith effort by the majority of the nations in the world to move nuclear disarmament forward. All of the nuclear armed countries boycotted that process. They said that it was not meaningful, et cetera. Yet, at the same time, we don't see them making any progress whatsoever. What's interesting to me is that Donald Trump just showed that it's possible to talk to your adversary about nuclear weapons. That's not something that's happened recently. And, you know, that's really exciting to me. And I really hope that this momentum will carry forward and encourage all of the nuclear armed nations to get together and negotiate these weapons away. We have to do it. It's a requirement under international law. It's been a requirement under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty for almost 50 years now. And we've not seen sufficient progress or really any progress. So it's something that we're continuing to push on, but there is a level of political will that is required of the nuclear weapons state in order to move it forward.
Gotcha. Thank you. Okay, I see one hand up, so there's very little waiting. If you want to press 1 on your keypad, you'll probably get your question answered or have a chance to engage. The one hand I see is Lynn. Go ahead, Lynn. Your mic is open.
Yes, with this need for the legislative push, I was just wondering, are you working with the veteransforpeace.org, the Jewish Voice for Peace.org, really important group now too, and CodePink.org, and a very, very inclusive World Beyond War and all kinds of groups is capital U, capital N, capital A, capital C, .org. Are you working with them? It's United National Anti-War Coalition. So are you working with that group, .org? They've got 40 or 50 affiliates that can help move the legislation. And also the Quakers. They have a Washington, D.C. branch, and they're for peace, and they work on national legislation also. Oh, and also the Indivisible. I heard there were 6,000 different Indivisible groups. So that's indivisible.org.
Okay. Great question, Lynn. Thank you so much for bringing this issue up. We do work closely with a number of the groups that you mentioned, but not all of them. So I will, in particular, UNAC, I will be reaching out to them based on your recommendation. But yes.
You do want to make sure, though, that when you go on, because there's kind of some troll things, anyway, that when you open it, it has a big banner, and it's then it says United National Anti-War. They didn't put the W in coalition on the banner, and they have a lot of, like, Black Lives Matter and other groups there, too. World Beyond War, anyway, thank you. Thank you
sure.
So much for,
okay.
for your work, and keep up the good job. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Lynn. Let me just mention one more thing around, cooperating with other groups. I think that all of us know that this job is too big for any one of our groups to accomplish on our own. So we have to work together. We all have our own somewhat distinct organizational goals. Our mission statements are slightly different. You know, we might have different takes on different things a little bit, but ultimately our goals are to achieve the abolition of nuclear weapons and to achieve peace. And we simply must work together in order to make that happen. we've got enough, we've got our hands full enough with the military-industrial complex opposing us for us to be opposing each other internally as well. That is one of my big focuses in my individual role at the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation is reaching out and cooperating with other organizations.
Great. Thanks, Rick. Yeah, we agree, of course, that it takes a big cooperative effort, and it's a great point, Lynn, and we're glad we're getting to share some territory tonight. There are no other hands up, so I'm thinking maybe we could segue into a quick discussion of the bill that we're going to be talking about tonight. This is a bill, the Bill to Restrict the First Use of Nuclear Weapons Act is actually on our legislative slate, so folks may have heard us cover this bill in previous months. I think it was in October or November when we talked about it last. From what I remember reading, I believe it now has something like 80 co-sponsors in the House and maybe 13 in the Senate. And for those of you who've worked to get bills introduced into the Senate after getting it into the House, you know that's no small achievement to get 13 co-sponsors in the Senate. So that may be something that we segue into discussing a little bit, but actually I do see that a hand has gone up, and it's one of our board presidents. So I'm going to – a couple of hands have gone up, and they're both of our board presidents have jumped into the discussion. So let me first recognize Judy Kimmel and see what she has to talk about. Welcome, Judy.
Hi. Thanks, Rick. I loved your summary of the 4 points, and so useful for us all to get a review of, particularly in these times with Trump coming back from North Korea. And I share your intention that the work that he's done there, no matter what you think about him as an individual person, that it moves the agenda forward. And I was going to comment that I think actually now is a very hot time to be hitting this issue. So it's perfect timing that you're here, because I think people are now thinking about nuclear weapons for a change, which, you know, there have been so many things to absorb our attention that it's often difficult to choose what to look at. But this does seem to be an important time. I was wondering, one thing, this is kind of a segue, but with regard to the modernization bill that you were referencing and the $1.7 trillion, is any of that, do you know, is any of that $1.7 trillion going to dismantling some of these weapons, or are we just going to continue to build more, and what is happening with regard to that?
Great. Thanks for your comments, Judy, and that's a great question. Dismantlement is something that we have been together with a lot of our allies in a national network called the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability. We've been really pushing that as something positive that the U.S. should be investing in. The funding for dismantlement has remained flat over the past number of years, probably past decade, at a whopping roughly $50 million. Now, $50 million is a lot of money. Our groups could do a lot with $50 million. But when we're talking about the nuclear weapons industry, that is a paltry drop in the bucket. They have been dismantling roughly 200-ish nuclear weapons a year, which is good, right? But there are thousands in the queue awaiting dismantlement.
Right.
So, what's really important about that is, you know, we have these thousands of nuclear weapons that are officially considered retired and out of the stockpile. But until they're dismantled, they technically could be brought back into service and used.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why dismantlement is of utmost importance. That's what 0.something very small percent of the U.S. nuclear weapons budget currently going to dismantlement. And there's not more that is being proposed at any point. But that is one rise in the nuclear weapons budget that we would definitely support.
Yeah. So is that $50 million part of the $1.7 trillion, or is that a separate? You know, was that a separate act or action by Congress to approve that, or was is that part of it contained in the overall military budget that gets passed every year?
Right. So the $1.7 trillion never will be voted on as a whole. These things are voted on year by year, you know, in a very piecemeal sort of way. The $1.7 trillion is the Congressional Budget Office's best guess as to what the long-term plans as currently laid out are going to cost. But, you know, every year the U.S. is spending, you know, somewhere in the $40 to $50 billion range. And those things are voted on again, in a very piece-by-piece way by Congress. So
yeah, so it kind of hides it, you know, of course, which we do all the time with everything, yeah, so that you don't get a real sense of the impact of the overall, in terms of the overall budget, because it's broken
out. Definitely. And, I mean, the U.S. nuclear weapons budget is spread across the Department of Energy, Department of Defense, Homeland Security, State, probably something else as well. So, it's very hard to pin down exactly how much we're spending, but it's a ton.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Yeah, no, that's interesting. All right, thank you. I don't want to usurp your time, but thanks for the information. It's good information to know.
Okay, sure. Thank you, Judy.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Judy. Now I'll recognize our other board president, and we just got a few minutes. I think this will probably be our last question before we move into reviewing the action. Go ahead, Terry Mason, our other dear board president, working hard to keep us flourishing. Welcome, Terry.
Hi. Rick, thank you so much for being here this evening. I'm telling you, I learned a lot already, and I felt like I knew some, but thank you so much for all the information you shared. I'm wondering if there is some distinction. I mean, the goal, as I understand it, is nuclear disarmament, which I'm completely in favor of. But I know that there's also nuclear energy sources that are providing energy to the world. So I wonder if there's some distinction between these two and how that discussion is framed.
Sure. So my organization works very much on nuclear weapons, very little at this point on nuclear energy, but we do have a lot of allies who are working very hard on the nuclear energy front. There are absolutely some connections between the two. A lot of the countries that have developed nuclear weapons over the years have started out under the guise of what they called a peaceful civilian nuclear energy program. Through the dual-use technologies, they kind of secretly or not so secretly transitioned to developing nuclear weapons. So it's definitely a danger, and it's going to be very difficult to maintain a nuclear weapons-free world as long as nuclear energy is still a thriving business. It's by and large a dying industry. That's not 100% the case just yet, but it's extremely difficult for it to compete economically against other forms of energy production at this point. Of course, the other thing to mention there is another thing that it has in common with nuclear weapons, of course, is the production of nuclear waste, which will be highly radioactive, toxic, and deadly for tens of thousands of years. And we still do not have a solution for what to do with that waste. So, this is a problem that both on the weapons front and the energy front, we're really kicking that can down the road to future generations, and it's very irresponsible and short-sighted by us as a society to do those things.
Mm-hmm. So the focus then is to disarm nuclear weapons and to deal with the dismantling, as Judy just raised, but in addition to reduce and eventually eliminate nuclear energy as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is a very worthy goal and is certainly something that we would support.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here this evening.
Yeah, thank you, Terry.
All right. Thanks, Terry, and thanks, everybody. So, Rick, I want to thank you really deeply for joining us tonight. And if you would like to stay, we'll be discussing this action in a few minutes, and you're welcome to stay for the next 10 or 15 minutes or so as we sort of go through this action. But if you need to go, we totally understand it. We're happy to carry on without you. Do you have a sense of whether you will be sticking around or to be?
Yes, I'm gonna stick around as long as I can.
yeah, I'll just kind of quietly jump off when I need to.
Okay, sounds good. So if the question comes up, we may refer it to you. And
sure.
Just on a personal note, I noticed that your organization was founded in 1982. The Nuclear Age Peace Foundation was founded in 1982, which incidentally was the same year I was in high school, and the same year I volunteered for a group called Future Generations for Nuclear Disarmament. And there was a peacekeeping rally. I was a peacekeeper at a rally in Central Park for nuclear disarmament. I just thought that was sort of an interesting connection. Stuff was dawning on me at the same time. Apparently, it was dawning on some folks who founded an organization.
Yeah, I believe that was actually the anniversary today of the million person march in Central Park.
This was the same year, but it was actually a smaller rally. This was in Delacroix, also in Central Park.
Okay.
It was a concert with Richie Havens and James Taylor and speakers but that same year is that huge rally. Yep.
All right. Fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. So before we go into reviewing the action sheet, again, if you haven't already, please go to your inbox and get that action sheet somewhere visible. I have a quick announcement, which is we're going to have a new technology on our monthly calls starting next month, starting in July. We actually have we're going to be using a Zoom technology. So folks who would like to enter our monthly call by computer, if you have a camera on your phone, if you have video capability, you can be seeing the speaker, you could be seeing me and other people who step up to ask questions and have discussion. So we'll have a video capable platform. You can still use your telephone. We'll have a dial-in number, and we'll share at the same time as we share the link for that call. So watch for that in your inbox next month. Those of you who want to use your computers to access the call will likely have to download the Zoom software, the app. And it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple. And hopefully that'll enhance our coming together experience and be even more fun and effective. So watch for that next month, little change. I'm going to put all the hands down because I'm looking for a volunteer who's willing to read the first couple of paragraphs on the action sheet. Do we have a volunteer who's willing to read aloud just so we have one other voice who's entering the call and sharing that? Nobody feels like reading aloud right now. Okay, I'll go ahead and read it if nobody else wants to read it. So again, this treats a bill that we have supported in the past, and you can find it on our legislative slate on our website if you want more information. But here's what it says on the action sheet. How can we prevent the U.S. from launching a nuclear first strike? One step is H.R. 669, or S-200, the Restricting the First Use of Nuclear Weapons Act. This bill prohibits the president from using the armed forces to conduct a first-use nuclear strike unless such strike is conducted pursuant to a congressional declaration of war expressly authorizing such strike. And as I said before when I welcomed you all, it makes me feel a little bit sick just contemplating that something like this could happen. This is a small step that we can take to make it less likely that such a catastrophe could happen without at least some congressional review and oversight. So the next paragraph is a quote from Megan Amundson, who's the executive director of the Women's Action for New Directions. And Ms. Amundson said, Representative Liu and Senator Markey have rightly called out the dangers of only one person having his or her finger on the nuclear button. The potential misuse of this power in the current global climate has only magnified this concern. It is time to make real progress toward lowering the risk that nuclear weapons are ever used again, and this legislation is a good start. So, as I mentioned earlier, I believe, and Rick, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe there are 13 co-sponsors in the Senate and around 80 in the House. Is that what I saw in your material earlier?
It might be slightly over 80 now in the House, but around there, yeah.
Okay, terrific. So the action for this month, what we're recommending and asking is for folks to both call and write. And we've got the dial-in number for the congressional switchboard, as usual, is on your action sheet. And for the write-in option, we've given you a link to the SALSA advocacy system that the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation has set up. They've set up a system on this particular bill, so you can just enter your zip code and address, and then it will figure out if your members of Congress are already co-sponsors or not. And if they are co-sponsors, it'll thank them for their support and encourage future support for this bill. And if they're not co-sponsors, it'll ask them to co-sponsor. And then you'll automatically be on the email list for the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, which sounds like a good thing to me. So those are the options that you have on this action sheet. I see Judy's hand has gone up. I don't know if that was an accident, but I was about to call for a volunteer to do a role play of the call to your member of Congress. I will ask you, let me just see what Judy has in mind. Maybe she had a question. Judy, do you have a question?
Yeah, I did have one quick question, and that is, Rick, mm-hmm. are there plenty of people to approach in the House and the Senate, but are there any specific senators or co-sponsors in the House that you're working, really focusing in on that we could, in addition to contacting our own, senators and congressmen, also approach them as well?
At this point, we are just hoping to get anyone and everyone in on this.
Oh, I see.
And so I was in D.C. a couple weeks ago, and I had a meeting with Ted Lieu, who's the representative who introduced this in the House. And, basically at this point, his goal is not necessarily to get this bill debated and passed in the whole House, but to really build up the numbers for the next Congress. And so his goal right now is to get it up to 100 co-sponsors so that when he reintroduces it in the new Congress in January, that we've got a lot of momentum behind it and we can get those numbers up right away and hopefully get it debated and passed in that new Congress.
Got it. All right. Thank you. That's helpful.
Thanks, Judy. Great. So, I also have to come clean. There's a typo on this action sheet. When I used the dial-in information, I copied and pasted it from a previous action sheet. I did change the bill numbers, HR 669 S200, but in number two, it talks about violence prevention and skills for conflict resolution in the educational system. So that's clearly from a previous action sheet. It's pretty clear folks can probably guess what you would want to talk about around this bill. As usual, the bare minimum is plenty. If you make this phone call, get in touch with somebody in your senator's and representative's office and say, I want my senator to support HR 669 or S200, that checks the box and that sends a message. It weighs in for you. If you want to go further and tell the person on the other end of the phone why this is important to you, that you want a more safe world, that you think we need to find more diplomatic solutions, that you think we need to create more safety, spend our money more wisely, whatever details are more important to you personally, feel free to wax philosophical and from your heart about that. So is there anybody willing to role play that conversation, calling the congressional switchboard and just asking for your senator or your representative and making that request? It's a simple process, but sometimes it really helps, we find, to hear somebody walking through that process. You press 1 on your keypad if you're willing to be the person to show us how you would do it. All right, I'm gonna twist the arm of my dear friend Laurie once again. Oh, wait, there's another hand that's gone up. It's Terry's. I was gonna go back to Laurie, but we'll go with Terry. Thank you, Terry. Hi.
Hi.
Terry, can you hear me? You might have your phone muted.
I
okay, there you are.
I'm on mute.
Great. So I'd love to start out with you saying ring, ring, so I know you're calling the switchboard.
Ring, ring.
Hello, Congressional Switchboard. How may I direct your call?
Hi, I'd like to speak with my Congressman, Brad Sherman.
Just a moment, please. Buzz, 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 buzz. Congressman Sherman's office, this is Dan speaking. How may I help you?
Hi, my name is Terry Mason, and I'm a constituent. I live at 16425 Otsego Street in Encino. And I'm calling regarding H.R. 669, which is Restricting First Use of Nuclear Weapons Act of 2017. I know that Brad Sherman is a co-sponsor of this legislation, and I just want to thank him for being so and ask him to be a greater champion of it and spread it more widely throughout Congress and get it passed.
Okay. I will certainly pass your opinions on to the congressman, and I appreciate your call. Is there anything else?
I just want to thank him for his co-sponsorship and let him know that I am, too, in favor of a world that is free of nuclear weapons.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Okay. Wonderful, Terry. Thank you. So we'd love to do a quick debrief. What did you do there? If you can still remember it, maybe a blur, but what did you do that you're happy about, that you would do again when and if you make the actual call? Do you remember what you did that you liked?
Well, whenever I make a call, the very first thing out of my mouth is to say that I am a constituent, if that's true, mm-hmm. If I'm not calling a different member of Congress office for a different reason, because that carries weight. It means they're going to pay attention. Mm-hmm. The second thing was to have the bill number, to have it mm-hmm. ready, because they'll be able to write that down and then go look it up. In this mm-hmm. case, I know he's a co-sponsor, which is, you know, a positive thing. I can just say thank you. But that's a really important action to take. It's really important to let your members of Congress know that you appreciate the actions they're taking, what they are co-sponsoring, and not just contact them when you want them to do something different or do something more. It's really important just to develop the relationship with your member of Congress. So I think that was good. Mm. And also at the very end, just to thank him for supporting the overall picture that I'm after also.
Great. Can I ask, how did you know that he was a co-sponsor?
I just went to the link on the action sheet and submitted through Rick's organization and saw that it's a thank you letter.
Ah, fantastic.
I didn't know that before.
Terrific. Another way you could have found out would be you could go to congress.gov and enter the number of the bill or the name of the bill and click on the co-sponsors, and you'd see a list of co-sponsors. So you can do that for any bill. If you want to know who's co-sponsoring which bills, you can go to congress.gov and enter the name and the number. Great. Can I mention one other thing that you did that I think was great?
Sure.
You thanked him for his co-sponsorship, and you asked him to go beyond. You asked him to go ahead and champion this bill to take it to the next level. So that's mm-hmm. Powerful as well.
Yep.
Terrific. And you also gave your address just to really drive home the point that you live in his district.
Yep.
Super. Rick, is there anything that you would add that you would want people to particularly say when they make these calls?
No, you know, I think that's it. I think that if you keep it simple, then that's great. I don't think there's really – this one's not that complicated. So I don't think you need to bog yourself or the staff member down in too many detail.
Perfect. I wanted to mention with President Trump meeting with Kim Jong-un right now, that it's going to be all over the news probably for at least another couple of days. It's a great time for letters to the editor of your local paper. Any local, regional, or a larger scope newspaper is going to have articles online and in print editions. You could, you know, crank out a 150 or 200 word letter just saying this is a great time to make sure that first strike capability is really limited, is really monitored by Congress. You can find information that you know you could feed into those letters to the editor on our website or the Nuclear Age Foundation website. So I want to encourage folks, if you're feeling passionate about this and want to get your thoughts and feelings out into the newspaper, that's something, if you mention your member of Congress in that letter, their clipping service will more than likely catch it, and that'll bring it to their attention that there's some social momentum behind this. All right, I think that kind of wraps it up for this section. We're going to move into an update from the DOP committee and then updates from the field. Rick, is there anything else that you want to leave us with before we sort of change subjects? And you're welcome to stay for the remainder of the call if you want to. You're more than welcome. And if you want to go, we understand.
Yeah, I'm actually going to jump off. I just want to thank you all for the opportunity and look forward to working together and staying in touch.
Absolutely. We'd love it. Thanks for joining us. And feel free to reach out if there's anything we can cooperate around.
All right, will do. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Okay, and now we are honored to have our very own Nancy Merritt with an update from the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. We have quite a bit going on at the national level and at the California level, actually, for Department of Peacebuilding. We're just in the midst of Mother's Day PIE meetings. I know Mother's Day has already passed, but this is an action where we schedule meetings with our congresspeople and senators in our local, in the local offices. And we've had probably around 20 or more in various states, and we're still continuing that action. So I'd encourage anybody who wants to do this. We're kind of going on the theme of making every day a Mother's Day call for peace and taking pie to your representatives to represent that peace wants a slice of the federal budget pie. And so far that I know of, we've had about 10 meetings in California, one in Colorado, two in Georgia, three in Illinois, four or more in New Mexico, and at least a couple in South Dakota. And this year we've met with both our federal representatives and senators, and in California we've done another kind of a new twist and have met with some of our state assembly people and some of our state senators too. So advocating obviously for Department of Peacebuilding, but other federal and state peace related legislation. So I'd love to hear from any of you who've done that or want to do that and have want any tips. You can write me at nancy at peacealliance.org. The second thing this fall over International Day of Peace, so September 21st and 22nd, we've been invited to be part of a panel discussion at the World Beyond War Conference in Toronto. And we'll be presenting a panel with the Canadian Department and Ministries of Peace folks. And you can go to their website and sign up. If you can go, that's great. And if not, they're going to be simulcasting some of this stuff. Then every year we go to Washington, D.C. around International Day of Peace. So this year we'll be going on September 21st and 22nd for part of the Pache Bene convergence, so nonviolence convergence for 2 days. And then on that Sunday we'll go to the African American Museum, and then on the Monday, the 24th through the 26th, we'll go to Capitol Hill to meet with our congresspeople and senators. And we would love for all of you, anybody who can come, to come. It's really a fun thing to do, and it's a really, you get a up-close and personal look at how our government works, and it's really interesting. So if you can come, again, contact me, and we'll be sending a save-the-date announcement soon. And So please come if you want to be part of the National Department of Peace Building Campaign conference calls. Our next call is next Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific. And again, just write to me and we'll put you on the list for that. And just wanted to let you know we've also promoted this this bill of restricting first use of nuclear weapons at some of at a lot of our events and lobbying things in Congress and going to meet with our representatives. So it's definitely another bill you can add when you meet with your congresspeople. And next time I'll tell you more about what we're doing in California. We've got quite a bit going on in July in California. So that's my report.
Thank you, Nancy. And for information or to connect around any of those initiatives, writing Nancy at nancy@peacealliance.org, spelled like it sounds, nancy@peacealliance.org. Thanks for all that update and all your amazing work. Okay, it's time for shares from the field. We have a few minutes left. And if anybody has stuff going on in your neck of the woods, campaigns, events, questions, if you have more questions about the action for this month or about anything that was covered, or if you want to let us know something that's going on with you, we'd love to hear about it. Again, you can press 1 on your telephone keypad, and I will call on you. So far, there's no waiting. Anything else that anybody wants to let us know about or anything that you're wondering about? Oh, let's see, Nancy might have a little more news for us or maybe a question. Yes, go ahead, Nancy.
Yeah, since we have a little time, another thing we've been doing in California is working with our California Democratic Party and have gotten peace-building initiatives into the platform, the last three platforms, and have gotten them to pass resolutions relating to peace-building. So every state party is structured differently, but if it's another avenue for folks to spread the word and get involved. And you can also work on city resolutions. You can also help us get organization co-sponsors, endorsers, and we'll add that to our list of organization people. And you can see that on the website, too. So, thank you.
Terrific. So I want to remind folks that the recording of this call will be on our website on the Educate tab. And along with the recordings from pretty much all our previous calls going back some years. So if you are interested in other actions, most of the actions that we've suggested in the last 8 or 9 months are still perfectly relevant. So once you take action on this, if you want a little more variety in your advocacy, you can sort of shop around. There are policy angles on education, on community peace building, on restorative justice practices. We're here to empower you in your peace-building advocacy and activism. If you have any questions about what we're doing or how we can support you locally, you're welcome to email me, dan@peacealliance.org, and we'll see how we can support you. It's now 1 minute to the top of the hour, so seeing no other hands up, I think we'll just bid you farewell. I'll give you a closing quote, and then I'll unmute everybody's mic so you can say goodnight to each other. And I'll close with the quote I usually use from Eleanor Roosevelt, who has told us that the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. So I wish you all wonderful dreams, and I wish you all a wonderful night. And now your mics are open. Good night.
Good night.
Good
night.
Good night.
Peace.
Peace. Out.
Hello?
Hello. Hi, Peggy. Hi, ma'am.
Hello?
Hi, Peggy.
Dan?
Yeah, hi.
How? I thought I was disconnecting, and then I'm messing with my, I'm on my cell phone. Hey, I'm glad to talk to you.